So welcome everybody to a very special All About Symbian Insight. Usually Rafe, Ewan and myself, we record in separate parts of the country in squalid basements, inside with rain pouring down outside. Today it's Rafe and myself and we're at a very pleasant country pub. The sun's beating down, the birds are twittering, not online I hasten to add, and we're having a very cosy British summer chat. So this is an All About Symbian Insight, but it's just Rafe and myself. We've got plenty of topics to get into. First of all, some news though. No more Nokia Mosh, no more Nokia widgets, and very soon no more Nokia Download, I suspect. And it's all onto Ovi Store. Rafe, any comments on some of the rolling in of these services?
Well, it's to be expected, and indeed Nokia talked about this at MWC, but it seems they're now making the formal announcements, and some people are still surprised, I guess, because they haven't heard about them. Mosh is closing at the end of this month, so just in a few days' time. Widsets is going to last slightly longer, probably to the end of May, but they're all going to be rolled into, and that's a slight misnomer, they're all going to be replaced by Ovi Store. So in the case of widsets, some of the widgets will probably be converted across, and we might expect in the future to be some easy way to create widgets that can then become available on the store. But I would imagine Nokia is probably contacting the top widget providers and making sure they transition to the Ovi Store. Similarly with Mosh, there's sort of, it's basically they don't want to confuse users, so you know, take that away and you get your content through Ovi Store. I'm sure there'll be some people disappointed because Mosh was very much the wilds of the internet, with, you know, you could download anything you liked and there was a certain amount of piracy going on there. And I suspect one of the prices of doing Ovi Store in terms of some of Nokia's partnerships, where they said, you know, you have to close down Mosh. I know, for example, that EA, when talking about Engage, and they'd seen some of their Java games pirated and weren't terribly happy about that. So, you know, Mosh was an interesting experiment on how these kind of downloads onto the phone and a distribution network. And I think a lot of the lessons they've learned in terms of making it very easy to use, which was one of the nice things about Mosh, have been applied to the Ovi Store.
I have to say, for it seems like a no-brainer to me, someone to say, oh, we're setting up a file sharing a system, and oh look, there's pirated content on there. I just think that was just very obviously coming. But I'm, as I say, it's closing now, so an end of the chapter, and as you say, Nokia are moving on and hopefully have learnt lessons. I have a question though about widsets and widgets and Ovi Store. How easy is it going to be for, say, the likes of you or I to think of a great idea for a widget, code it up in HTML and CSS and submit it to the Ovi Store? How involved a process is that, and how much will it cost?
It varies depending on the type of content you're doing, but effectively what you need to do is have your content, which is one thing, and as you'll know, for sort of SIS files, and that's Symbian native applications, also some themes and some other bits and pieces, you have to sign it, and to do that you have to go through Symbian Signed, and you'll need a publisher ID, which costs about $200-$250.
Even for widgets?
I'll come to that in a minute.
Okay.
And then you need to do a Symbian Signed instance. You can use Express Signed, which is $20 a time. So realistically, you have a setup cost of sort of $250 and then $20 or so a time. I suspect that will change, so that's as it is now. For web runtime content, and in theory for Flash content, which you can wrap either in web runtime or in SIS, there are actually no signing required, and so you can submit it to publish on Ovi for free. With that kind of content, it's free to submit and it's free to sign, so in theory there's no cost involved in getting it onto publish on Ovi. In order to sign up for publish on Ovi, you do need to have a tax ID, and that can be VAT, and it varies, and we're not really in a position to provide sort of support on what's in which country, because I'm not an accounting expert. That does give something of a barrier, but there should be ways around that, and there's a bit of advice on the forum Nokia Store. I suspect in time that process, especially for free content, will be eased, and certainly talking to Nokia, that's their intention. At the moment, you really need to be a company and have the sort of the tax ID, so it's difficult for individuals.
So like the Apple and the iPhone App Store, there will need to be explicit approval from Nokia or the people running the Ovi Store to manually approve each item before it goes in.
Yes, although it's worth noting that Nokia have a very different acceptable user policy to Apple. They're restricting on the basis of content, in terms of that there are certain terms and conditions, and it's basically nothing that's you can imagine racist or, you know, in otherwise against minorities. Yes, the usual stuff you'd expect. It's not banning stuff on the basis that it may compete with Nokia, which Apple, as you know, does do. Nor is it saying you can't do that because we don't think it's you know, the sort of thing you should be doing with your phone. It's purely on the basis of what would be considered, I guess, if you like, polite. So if you want to do, for example, applications that do tethering, that's not going to be a problem. If you want to do an alternative contacts application or podcast application, Nokia will sign that. And it's very noticeable that Ovi Store, compared to the other application stores, has a much more open policy in terms of the content it will accept. And indeed, it's sort of the way it's run.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what people can do in terms of innovative and out-of-the-box thinking with widgets, given that there's quite a low barrier to entry in terms of time and money. Nokia, when they launched the Ovi Store, they were very specific about it's going to have extra things you haven't seen in app stores before, i.e. location sensitivity. And I'm sure there are some really innovative solutions out there just waiting to be put into action. I have one question about Ovi Store. Is that what's going to happen to Engage? I know this is possibly a subject for another podcast in the future, but have you any early thoughts on exactly how Engage will be rolled into Ovi?
I know we've been talking about this on All About Symbian and All About Engage, and Tizer too on All About Engage sort of firmly believes that there isn't really the scope for them both to survive, and that there's, you know, two icons on the phone and users will sort of tend to go to one, and because Ovi Store will likely have more games because there'll be third-party access, people will sort of tend to go towards that. And I think there's some, you know, a lot to be said for that argument, but the truth is we don't actually know yet. Just to pick you up on what you were saying about the widgets, that's absolutely right. People are even now underestimating the sort of the power of web runtime. You know, the basic widgets, yes, they are just HTML, but there's quite a lot of possibilities there, as I think we saw with the first version of the iPhone, how much you can do with just basic web stuff. But I think more exciting than that on S65th edition, and it'll possibly be ported back to S63.2, is the what's being referred to as the phone services, and that's things like being able to access the address book, the GPS, and stuff like that. And I think in the future it's going to go even further, and you can expect more phone services to be added, and so an awful lot of the basic stuff will be completely accessible from, as you say, this basic web and JavaScripting language, and then styled with CSS, and that makes it a lot more accessible. And I think, more to the point, it's you know, a lot quicker to code. So I've seen some examples where people were comparing web runtime versus iPhone. For example, they were saying that they were able to do it in about 20% of the time using just their basic web stuff. And that was a web service and so has some existing infrastructure, obviously. But I think actually web runtime and widgets will probably become one of the key things for the sort of, if you like, the disposable applications that we've seen an awful lot of in the iPhone store. Does it work so well for games? Now, that's an interesting one because you can't do the game so easily. But for that kind of disposable application, you know, even, you know, dare I say it, you know, a farting application that you can quite happily do as a widget.
No, let's not go down that road. The things I'm most interested in, I think this is the Web 2.0, if not the Web 3.0 age, and almost every service has its own API, and what was very restrictive in terms of writing a widget, say, 5 years ago, you can now do an awful lot more with a widget because the APIs are there and the hooks are there into all sorts of web services to get more and more real-time information on your contacts and stuff happening around you in via this widget interface.
That's right, and if you look at some of the trends in terms of the semantic web and the way that's going, that sort of thing is only going to increase. And if you look at RDF, for example, or projects like Freebase or others like that, which attempt to take big gobs of content and make it machine readable and referenced against each other in a semantic way, that makes it very exciting in terms of contextual information. And that's the sort of, I think, trend that's going to be really big, and as you say, can be addressed through widgets. You don't necessarily have to store the stuff on the device. And so for a lot of the social and location stuff, there's a lot of potential there. And you were asking about the social and location stuff earlier. I really do think that's going to be a very important part of it, because the issue with the app stores as they stand, and this applies to the Android marketplace, the app store, and traditional electronic software distributions that run over the web, is the discovery isn't very good once you get past about 1,000 applications. With the kind of the social and the location element built in, you've got an extra index to search against, and be that what your friends are downloading, and if you then maybe combine in location. I mean, I see location as sort of another important index. It's not a feature in itself, but when you think about the applications you use, location does tend to be quite important. It's kind of time, space are the two critical factors. Whether it'll be implemented exactly perfectly the first time around, I don't know. And if you're a bit of a skeptic, you sort of say, well, actually, OVUSTORE is really about Nokia trying to sell wallpaper and ringtones on Series 40 devices, and actually that's probably where the money will be initially, because the support in terms of the on-device clients is actually better for Series 40 than it is for S60 at the moment.
Yeah. I hope you're enjoying this insight at home. We have the wind's getting up, we've got birds in the trees, we've got lorries outside and planes going overhead. But providing you're bearing with us, we're going to press on. Just to bring things back a slightly less abstract mode for a moment, as you may know that we get a lot of phones in for review. They're loaner machines from press offices and from different manufacturers, and we have to give nearly all of them back. Every now and then, a device really impresses us so much that we actually dip into our own pocket and pay our own hard-earned money for something that we can keep. And it doesn't happen very often, but it's happened to both Rafe and myself in the last week. Rafe, do you want to go first? Which device did you dip into your pocket?
Yes, that's right, Steve. I perhaps buy more devices than the average person, he admits guiltily. But yeah, it's part of the job, honestly. But you're right, you know, actually going out and buying a device is... And recently I've done that for the Nokia E75, and this is a device I've had on loan from Nokia UK for, I guess, about a month. But I really like this device because it's kind of its dual nature. It's both an ordinary phone in a sort of, you know, candy bar form factor, but also with the slide-out keyboard, it sort of has this second nature as a communicator device. And I do hesitate to use that given all the communicator fans around. But actually, I do buy into this because it's a full-size keyboard and it's great for email and messaging, especially with Nokia messaging. I'm using Mail for Exchange, and there'll be some stuff on the site about that in due course. But it's also good for web browsing. It's running S60 3.2, which is a first for the E-series, which just makes the performance that little bit snappier. And, you know, it has the destinations, which just work better when you're doing a lot of connected stuff, especially with email and web browsing. And it's very nippy as a device. The camera's a little better than the E71. I mean, I still like the E71 an awful lot. But this is actually more of a combination device. And as I say, this dual nature, and with the E-series, you've got the great build quality. So it's a bit indefinable, and it's actually what suits me personally, and I'd recommend other devices to other people. But for me, the E75 is a really nice device, and yeah, of course I'm looking forward to some that's coming down the road. But I was surprised to find myself, you know, I have access to a number of devices, and I was surprised to find how often I was picking up the E75 just as the default device.
How early would you say in its firmware cycle is? How early does it feel in terms of using it?
It is still early in its firmware cycle, so there are some problems. For example, with the Nokia messaging, it sometimes forgets to do the sync. I had less problems with that because I was using the Mail for Exchange part of it, which is maturer than Nokia messaging. And there are some bits that will, I think, annoy people. I didn't come across them too much in my day-to-day use, so that therefore it was fine by me. And it had all the stuff I use regularly, like Nokia Maps already on it, and the podcasting client, and bits and pieces like that. So largely, I was quite impressed by that, and I think that's, you know, fairly true of E series in general. They too tend to have slightly better firmware at release than the N series devices.
You were mentioning before we started recording this podcast that the HTML view in the messaging is still an example of where big strides still need to be made.
Yeah, I mean, Nokia messaging still has a lot of work to do. I mean, they've fantastically eased the setup process, and I think most people can now click on the email wizard, you know, enter their email and their password, and for a lot of people that will be it. And that's incredibly impressive for a device, and all the technology is going back on the Nokia servers, and actually there's been some controversy around that, which I guess we could touch on another time. But yes, for example, HTML email is still irritating because it's not loaded by default as it is in, say, RoadSync from DataViz, who have done an outstanding job on their Exchange implementation, and that's really what Nokia need to be aiming for, and full screen support as well. You click on the link and then it takes about 5 or 6 seconds to load up, and actually it's loading up a web browser component in the background, and then it wants to download the images. So it can be anything up to, you know, 10 seconds or even 20 seconds if you're on a slow connection before you see the full HTML email, and to my mind that's just not good enough yet.
Yeah, I know people talk about some of these S60 phones having fairly low clock speeds partly to ease the burden on battery life, but that certainly seems to be needing a dire need of optimization. And my gut feel is that Nokia could improve it by a factor of 2 or 3 quite easily.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's not down to the processor, because the rest of the E75 is extremely nippy in terms of that's 3.2, and it's you know, it's a mature hardware platform that it's running on. So I suspect, yes, that could definitely be improved. And I'm sort of disappointed that hasn't happened yet. Maybe you have to be realistic and say HTML email is actually still a, you know, it's not something that's absolutely essential, but they need to work on that. You know, they've got the folder support now, which is something they didn't have before. And so HTML email is the, what I would refer to as the last mainstream feature. There's still other stuff I'd like to see done. But, you know, they have done some extra things like, you know, you can set your away message from your mobile device and the remote management is much better now. But, you know, we're never going to be happy. We're always going to be pushing for the next thing.
And in defence of Nokia and other phone manufacturers, people trying to render, quote, HTML email, it's a moving target, because what was considered HTML email 3 years ago, 4 years ago, which would have been a few header tags, a few bold tags, italics, maybe a small table, maybe a small image. The things people throw into HTML code these days are actually quite ambitious and advanced, and it will take a mobile device quite a while to download and interpret and render it. And this, all the time, the complexity of the HTML is increasing, so it's very much a moving goalpost.
That's right. But people are going to be comparing it to other phones like, you know, the G1 or the iPhone and see a better experience there.
Yeah.
So it's not really a excuse. Having said that, you know, if you get something like some keen press person sending you a press release with a YouTube video in it to illustrate the point,
it doesn't help.
It's the only phone that can actually play those natively.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, you know, very impressive. It does take a long time to load.
Yeah, the Google powered the T-Mobile G1 has the benefit of the Chrome browser, and I was trying the Chrome on my Windows laptop over the last 3 or 4 months, and I've been tremendously impressed by the speed of the JavaScript handling.
Yeah.
Almost next generation, 3 or 4 times faster than that in Internet Explorer, and I'm guessing that there are some big speed improvements being made in terms of optimizing the JavaScript handling within the WebKit-based browsers like the S60 browser.
Yeah, on the G1, again, it's quite impressive. I know you've been using it recently. It's not quite as good, and some of the other support isn't quite there on the G1's web browser. And I think that's a case where there is some limitations with some of the processing, although the upcoming Cupcake update to Android 1.5, I know, is going to fix some of those. So it's probably something we should revisit in a future podcast.
Yeah. And well, we mentioned both of us have been smitten by the dipping into our pocket bug. And I buy far less phones than Rafe, it has to be said, over the years. I've only bought with my own money about 3 or 4 that have stayed with me to this day, things like devices I consider classics. I went out and bought a black N82, which is as rare as hen's teeth, as far as I can tell. It was only ever released in the UK as under a contract phone under Orange, but I managed to secure a rare, SIM-free, unlocked version off eBay for what I consider a song, and I'm very, very happy. The N82 impresses me, not because of the styling of the keypad, which continues to irritate me to this day, but the fact that it's nigh on indestructible. It has the best video recording of any phone today, maybe not in terms of specifications, but in terms of reality and lack of drop frames and proper focusing. It focuses at about a metre or so, which is just perfect for person-to-person interviews. It's stellar image quality, and of course the big selling point, the thing I wanted just to introduce a brief discussion on, the Xenon Flash. Now, I've gone on about this in previous podcasts, but I'm bringing it up once more time, because next to me on the table, beside the N82, I have the Nokia 6220 Classic and the Samsung G810, which are the 3 Symbian-based smartphones. In fact, probably the only 3 smartphones in the world, because I don't think any other manufacturers and operating system platforms use Xenon in any of the hardware. The only 3 smartphones in the world that have Xenon Flash. So they're all on the table in front of me. And Xenon is still as rare as hen's teeth, and I cannot see why. We're going to do some tests later on after this podcast is finished, and I'll put some results up on the site, so you'll be able to see the differences between these 3 devices in terms of their low-light image-taking quality. But each of these 3 is still head and shoulders above any other portable device. And the argument against other devices having Xenon is often put forward that the big capacitor that's needed to ramp up the 3 volts or so from the phone's battery to the 400 volts it takes to fire the Xenon tube, that capacitor is big and clunky and heavy, and therefore you have to have a huge device, and the N82 is often seen as quite a thick device, even though it's actually about 19 mil, Rafe?
I think that's
about
right,
19
yep.
mil. But the 6220, the Nokia 6220 Classic, is significantly narrower, I would say somewhere around 14, 15 millimetres. And yet it really feels quite small and dinky in the hand, and yet it's got a full xenon flash. So I don't accept this bulkiness argument. Another argument against xenon is that it uses large amounts of battery power. It does take extra charge, in energy in, energy out. To have a flash that's 30 times brighter or 50 times brighter than an LED flash in terms of energy out, but you obviously have to put 50 times the energy in. So if you take a lot of flash photography, you need a big battery. Having said that, the battery life of the N82 is certainly up to par as far as I'm concerned. Ditto the G810 from Samsung, which I've got here, and ditto the Nokia 6220 Classic, although I admit I haven't tried the last day in, day out very much. I know Sony Ericsson, with the handset they announced at Mobile World Congress, which they codenamed iDo, their first Symbian foundation-powered handset, that has xenon flash, so obviously they've got that firmly in mind. And I've also been using the Sony Ericsson C905, which is an excellent xenon flash 8 megapixel feature phone from them, and that's really nicely put together. So they've obviously got their eye on the ball here, and I was amazed when the N86 wasn't launched with a xenon flash, just with dual LED, given the camera heavy specs of it. I'm still hoping that Nokia will produce a successor to the N82. I'm hoping that happens this year, and I'm hoping it happens with S60 5th edition, non-touch edition. And my question for Rafe is, he's been very quiet here, sitting in the sun with his orange squash. My question for Rafe is, when are we going to start to see S60 5th edition, non-touch powered handsets?
Well, it's kind of a misnomer to refer to S60 5th edition non-touch, because really that's S60 3.2. And there are a few subtle differences, because it's obviously Symbian OS 9.3 as opposed to 9.4. But it will happen in due course, and I suspect it will actually be when the Symbian Foundation handsets start coming in. So I guess we'd have to look towards the end of this year, and maybe well into next year before that sort of thing starts happening. And whether the S60 name is going to survive is still open to debate. But S60 3.2 is kind of the equivalent. So what you're really after is an N82 running S60 3.2. I mean, the points you're making about xenon flash are right. Although I would say, with all of these phones, they're sort of they're either candy bars or have thick top sliders. And so when you're thinking about thinner devices, like some of the E-series devices, for example, or some of the other N-series, you do get away from that. And it's not just the thickness, it's also the size it takes up inside the phone. And there are, limitations to what they can fit in, and it's always a compromise. So it's not necessarily an absolute result for something like the capacitor. The battery issue, I do think, is, probably more of an issue than people realise. If you're taking 20 pictures with the xenon flash, that's a significant portion of the battery being used by that, and given that you're also using it for phone calls and however many other things, the average user may not want that much used. I mean, personally, I'd agree with you, I'd like to see more xenon flash, but I suspect it's less of a issue for the average user, who just wants a decent picture, isn't necessarily looking for a complete camera replacement. How true that is, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see some user research on that.
Well, from all the comments on that, whenever I stick my head above the parapet on all about Symbian and mention it, I get a barrage of comments, people all agreeing with me, saying yes, we also want Xenon.
Well, how can I put this politely, Steve? I think all about Symbian audience is probably fairly atypical as phone users. I mean, there is also the issue around the video light, which you can't use a xenon flash as a video light, which actually I do think is a valid one. I don't think it's Nokia's intransigence or any of the other manufacturers' intransigence with this. They're not deliberately setting out to irritate you. It's more a question of they've done the market research, and it's what their total user audience wants, and it frustrates the technology leaders at the high end. But there's also a cost issue as well, of course, with xenon flash is far more expensive than LED flash. I think it's double or maybe even triple the cost. I'd have to look up some details on that. So that'll be an issue as well. And is that value enough to offset the advantages in the whole of the marketplace? And I suspect the answer to that is probably not. But yes, I mean, yes, please, Nokia. I would like I'd actually like to see xenon flash on both an S60 5th edition and a 3.0 non-touch device. And because, you know, the camera is still one of the big selling points about phones, because that's what an awful lot of people use. I think, you know, obviously, you know, texting and voice calls are still right at the top, and web's come up, but, you know, web and camera is about equal in a lot of the user surveys I've seen. You know, smartphone 360 and others certainly suggest that pattern of use, and so it does seem to be something that, as you said, there's the user demand for, even if it is just the sort of the techies at the top end.
Well, the problem is that they're having namby-pamby weak LED flash. it creates a very bad impression. People think, okay, I'm taking a photograph down the pub at night with my phone, whatever manufacturer it is, whichever device, it's going to produce a fairly rubbish photograph, but at least I'll have some memory of the event. And the comparison with what they could have, if this Nokia 6220 I'm holding, it's genuinely feature phone size in every dimension, and yet it's got Xenon. And if you take a photograph with this down the pub, and you're going to produce a glorious photograph, crisply frozen in time, and will show up all your friends' camera phones and put them to shame. So I'm not going to go on about this any longer. But
well, I'd like to put the counter argument and say, you know, when I go badger watching, you know, and I want to take a video, I need my LED so I can take a video of the badger coming out of his hole. And admittedly, you know, he normally runs a mile when he sees this LED shining at him. But there's a user case the other way as well.
Ah, but when you photograph the badger, you're going to have a blurry moving shot with a blur of a badger, whereas I'm going to have a crisply frozen in time badger.
Well, the badger is also going to shoot 6 feet in the air when the Xenon flash goes off.
Ah, but by then I've got the photograph.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
We'll move on now before people get bored with me going on about things I've gone on before. Now, Rafe's been off meeting people this week. Before we finish, just like a brief report, if possible. You've met Orange and you've met Three with slightly different approaches to how they integrate services and websites from third parties. Rafe?
That's right. Well, so the services have been occupying a lot of my thoughts in the last year. And, you know, we talk a lot about the cutting-edge stuff and what Nokia is doing, but ultimately the issue is how you deliver these to end users, and the reality is this has to be through operators at the moment. And so I had a chat with Orange over the phone and went to a round table with Three to sort of talk about some of these issues, and I think it's fair to say they're both probably on the cutting edge of this kind of service provision. They're a lot more forward-thinking than some of their competitors. You know, they're all thinking about it, but they're taking contrasting approaches. So, for example, Orange for a long time has had a very strong segmentation strategy, and we've seen this in what they refer to as their Orange Signature devices and the Orange Container program. And this is basically they choose hero devices and customize them with the Orange look and feel, and that's been very controversial with Orange firmware. But it has also worked in terms of their bottom line, that with their signature devices, they typically get users spending more money. So it's been commercially quite successful, even if it's not been terribly popular with high-end users. So we do have to think about the commercial stuff. And they've also been able to push it out to a lot more of their customers than is typical. You know, one example of this is the Orange Messenger by Microsoft, which is actually a version of the Live Messenger client, which is customized by Orange, and they've pushed both on the PC and on the mobile as part of their quad play strategy, particularly in France. And they've now got 1 million users signing up for that in the last, I think, 18 months or so. And that's not a small number, that's an impressive result. There's obviously still work to do, and they were talking about how they're going to do this going forward. And it's effectively taking other people's services to create the best in class and aggregating the services together, but then putting the Orange brand on the top, and also the Orange are doing the identity management, or owning the customer, if you like. And so it's single sign-on from an Orange service. And this is what the intention is. You know, that we've seen the recent announcement with Nokia Messaging, and there's also Nokia Maps from about a year ago, but they've also made announcements with eBay, with Bebo, Facebook, and Wikipedia is the latest one. That was a content one rather than service, but they see content and services as two halves of the same thing. But it's very much, they will then take from those services, add them to their devices into their segments, and so you'll get a device that's targeted at a specific person, both in terms of the hardware but also the software and services. And that does create for a very, you know, compelling device.
Is this making it easier for the users, or is it making money for Orange?
Well, the idea is to make it easier for the users and get them using it, which therefore makes money for Orange. And honestly, that is the way that you need to go ahead. Most people don't want to fiddle about with choosing what services they want. They just want it to work, and they want, you know, it all patched up nicely for them. And I should stress, this isn't, you know, a power user thing, but this is how it goes to the mass market. And so Orange, you know, they have faced criticism, but I think it's perhaps, you know, unfair because they are doing something pretty difficult and groundbreaking, and you know, they're also doing some of their APIs allow third parties to get involved, and it's still early days, but I think this is, you know, a strategy that's very much worth watching. By contrast, Three in the UK are well known for some of their service uptake, and I think Skype is probably the most well-known example of that. And indeed, the other day they've now announced that Skype is basically free, even on a per-as-you-go SIM card. You don't need to top it up; you can just make Skype calls, and that's pretty revolutionary. You know, they say they did, I think it's 254 million or so Skype minutes last month. They're aiming for a billion minutes this year. But they've also been doing it with Facebook. For example, they had 98 million page views on Facebook last month, and obviously that's been climbing significantly. But their approach tends to be a little more, we'll just take these services and we're not looking to co-brand them with Three or do the identity management. We're just letting you use them. And there is something quite appealing about this for the power users, because it means you can start using them straight away and there tend to be more services available. Mm. You know, it's not, you know, okay, you're not using a 3ID to sign up and not the benefits of single sign-on. And I think that's more suited to the top tier and kind of the mass market. And a lot of people are familiar with that sort of stuff and they're quite happy to use separate identities and that kind of thing. And identity management and federation of these services through identity is a very controversial topic, because Nokia wants to own it, that's why they're doing, or the Orange want to own it because they have the relationship with the customer, and Orange always are very careful to say we're not signing up for the Ovi service as a whole, we're picking out the individual bits and adding them to our aggregated service model. So Three have actually had an awful lot of success in the short term getting people using it. You know, 1.2 million people in the UK alone using their kind of their services, be it Messenger or some of the Facebook and stuff like that. And given that their subscriber base is relatively small, that's a very impressive achievement. And I perhaps wonder whether Orange, I think, is the better long-term strategy, but is the world changing so much that, you know, it's difficult to be nimble enough to keep up? And that's why I find Three's model also attractive. But they should both be praised for being ahead of the curve in terms of putting services and making them easily available. And easily is the key word. You know, my sister, or who's, you know, perfectly technically literate but doesn't want to spend all her time worrying about it, when I show her something she'll use it and think it's cool, but she can get these services and start using them straight away as soon as she gets the phone. And that, I think, is a key factor,
as opposed to directing people to the Steve Litchfield patented handy mobile URL homepage, which not very many people really ever used. So yeah, having the millions coming in via the likes of Three and Orange's aggregators, it's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, and what's interesting, think even back just a few years, and the typical operator portal would try and tile you into, you know, Orange Music this or Three Music that, and both of the companies are keen to stress they're still very much looking to develop their own services because they get more of the pie that way. And so Three Music and Orange Music isn't going to go away anywhere. But Three in particular have a very interesting strategy in that they're putting both Nokia Music and Three Music on the device and giving users a choice. And that's something I really applaud as a high-end user. Yeah. I think there is some danger of confusion, you know, which one do I go for? But I really like the fact that Three are doing that, because I think user choice is key. And you can't actually tell what they want to use until you put it out there. So, you know, big plot, and they're saying they're not going to do anything to block Ovi Store or anything like that, which some of the operators have maybe talked about, and we'll have to wait and see on that one. I think that's probably a case of they can't afford to block it, because it's going to be revenue sharing with the sort of premium SMS and that kind of thing, and data as well. But you think back, you know, the idea of having Skype on your phone out of the box, and it's just, you know, that's amazing really compared to a few years ago, and you know, it does make me excited for the future, for what will come next.
Yeah, we have come quite a long way. Having come a long way, Rafe and I have travelled miles to be in this sunlit, sun-kissed beer garden, but it's time for another trip to the bar. So for now, we're going to say goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And we'll see you next week.